dreams, our money, debt, and we gotta pay back more than 100%. No wonder then why the middle class is going under when the ones above them gotta cover and come to collect. As many have no access to banking, making payments or saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rank Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. until 1.30, or maybe even a little bit longer if that's the mood we're in that day. And it's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain news, as well as other talk. And it's a very special week this week for this show. I'm very happy to have a special guest in the studio. We'll tell you about that and more in just a second. Well, it's another week, another record high, but this week it's followed by a 48-hour 20% plus drop and then a rebound for Bitcoin. Just another week. Have no fear. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the president is monitoring Bitcoin. Meanwhile, the CME Group, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, Cantor Fitzgerald, a new name in this group, as well as the NASDAQ, all announced specifics of their new Bitcoin futures market. Well, and it's all going to trigger the institutional cash flowing in to the market. And we have a very special guest in the studio today to tell you more about that and introduce him very quickly here in just a moment. Well, not a special guest, just always special. Here in the studio, as his habit, is Augie. Good afternoon, Augie.
Good afternoon, Henry.
And then standing by on the phone lines, we have other regular voices here that just couldn't get in, but they're special, too. And that, of course, is TradingView columnist Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy, approaching the 12,000 follower mark. And good afternoon, Andy, from your remote location.
Good afternoon, Henry. Glad to be here.
That's right. Also coming in from the remote side of things. And that, of course, would be... And that would be Lee Hansen, the CEO of Byte Federal, perhaps the fastest-growing Bitcoin ATM company on the face of the planet, at least in my humble opinion. Lee, good afternoon.
Hey, Henry. Thanks for having me.
All right. Spreading across the Southeast like Kudzo. That's a bit Byte Federal's Bitcoin ATMs. And then finally, teasing the special guest all this time as I finally... get his very short but appropriate intro ready. Well, returning to the studio, and this, I got to set this up just a little bit because this is very special for Augie and I. It's ultra special for me because I've known him, I don't know, 35 years, something like that. About 35.
I started working at your comic book store at 12 years old.
Yes.
Which I think is a some kind of labor violation.
No, you did that because you wanted to. it was not a transactional thing for until the checks in the Social Security system. That is when it actually you became a worker. You were a
hanger-on.
Part of the decor. And that, but it also... continues because the first time Augie and I ever talked on the radio about Bitcoin was on the old Morning Edge show that Augie hosted for multiple years here at WWPR in the morning drive time. And I said, why don't we have Mark Edge, which would be good that I actually see, mention your name here in the introduction. I think that's sort of pro forma.
That's why we named the show The Morning Edge.
Yeah. And even before you ever met him, you had the Edge on Blab TV just in anticipation
exactly.
of that moment.
7 years
Edge.
In anticipation.
Yeah. But he came on Free Talk Live, his nationally syndicated show, along with Ian Freeman, Is that the appropriate?
Yeah, he changed his name legally, so yeah.
Yeah, but he changed it since you were on the show before.
Yeah, it was.
And he
I don't know that he really used his last name on the show prior to that very much, but you know, it wasn't a secret.
Okay, all right.
Mine isn't either.
Well, I could reveal the whole other.
I don't have a problem with it.
Well, those of you from Bayshore High School,
right?
It's that Mark Edgington kid,
right?
Oh, yeah. Edgington. Ah.
Right. Yeah. So the idea, Augie, was for one, I was working for 106.5 CTQ, and I went out to the Miami City.
WSRQ?
No, CTQ. It's 106.5 on the FM dial. Country station. And I don't know if it is still, but I'm sure that.
No, it's Salsa.
Salsa? Well. anyway, I was doing the Miami City Volunteer Fire Department's Fire Muster and Antique Auto Show, and some gal with a little Fu Manchu rolls up on a quad thing, and she wanted to chit chat, and I think she thought I was a DJ as opposed to the salesman who sold the gig. I was on the radio, which she has every reason, you know, to be confused at that point. But anyway. Perhaps I could have been more clear that I had a girlfriend, and perhaps she could have respected some boundaries. But anyway, I decided being able to look us up.
Maybe the Fu Manchu was enough of a boundary for most people.
It was. She looked me up in the phone book. Those did exist at one point. I'm sure you
heard of those.
Yeah. And decided to show up at my house one day. Ooh. And so I thought that some kind of barrier between the phone book and me was appropriate. Plus, I figured people could spell Edge.
A little easier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they can't. Like, I've had people say, Ed Gay. They don't even know what to do with it, right? It's crazy.
You should have the name Augie.
I would not spell that either. A-U-G.
Neither do half the people on this show. So, all right. So, you got into radio.
Yep.
Somehow from the comic book in a circuitous path.
Oh, my.
lots of ups and much like Bitcoin. It was a roller coaster ride. To get to radio, and then you became a salesperson, as you said, but we don't have to say the name of the company, but it was a major radio company. And you got very successful at that.
Yep.
And how did they reward you?
Well, they took accounts from me and rewarded them to do salespeople that they liked better.
And said, thank you, Mark, let the door hit you on the way out?
Yeah, there was an incident at one point where the you like apples? You're fired. How about them apples?
That
was fun. But if you haven't been fired in radio, then, you know.
You haven't had any experience.
Right. You must be on brokered radio.
Right, you must be. So, yeah, anyway, we did Free Talk Live. We did it here in the Bay Area from 2002 to 2006. Right?
You and Ian are the founding fathers of Free Talk Live?
That's correct. We are.
So it's like the first same-sex, heterosexual parents of a nationally syndicated radio show.
Yep. And then we moved up to New Hampshire in 2006. My wife decided shortly thereafter, I think she spent two
years. You want to credit her name on the air?
No, she doesn't want to know that.
not even the first name?
Laura. Laura doesn't like winter much. She spent two winters up in New Hampshire. She got a child out of it, and she has been wintering down here since. So, you know, she has no.
Smart woman.
Yeah. Right. She got down in September this year to, I guess, the hurricane. So she wanted to be down to make sure that she came for the hurricane rode that out. So.
Okay. So how many stations is Free Talk Live on now?
Somewhere between 160 and 175, it just keeps on bobbing back and forth.
The hurricane's blowing through the tower.
Indeed, there's probably a tower that's been blown down and taken us off the air.
And it's a libertarian radio show.
But we've become very crypto-oriented, as you can imagine.
Actually, you were like the forefront of it, really, weren't you?
Well, yeah. So the major names in cryptocurrency, and people who are into it now may not even know these names, but Roger Ver, Charlie Shrem, and Gavin Andreessen all
mentioned on here often.
Good. They credit Free Talk Live as sort of giving Bitcoin the initial boost to be able to go into the stratosphere like it has. Not that we made it what it is today, but that we gave it that first sort of its legs to get going. Yeah.
Now, I've got plenty to add on to this as far as questions and all, but we have Lee and Andy that are on the sidelines on the phone there. So let me ask Lee first, because I'm going in reverse alphabetical order. Lee, do you have any questions for Mark?
Nope.
Okay, that was quick. Andy. Okay.
Negative.
Okay. All right. That's good. I really didn't want to disrupt my flow anyway. So, you had an interesting story with Augie and I when you first came in here. When you first came in, you tried to explain how Bitcoin worked, and Augie and I were here and we listened, and I had read about it. Augie listened to it, and 5 years later, we probably don't know much more than we did now. But you did tell a story about how one of the early adopters of it wanted to take you to lunch.
Right. So Gavin Andreessen, who was the former head developer of Bitcoin and was given the keys to the QT wallet, which is the original sort of node wallet, by Satoshi Nakamoto, not personally, over online.
So he knows that as a real person?
He doesn't know. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto isn't a person. Oh. It's in all likelihood a group of people.
Okay, I thought you were like handing the keys to the car or something. Yeah, but no, this was the...
Yeah, private keys. So he can send, could send, not entirely sure, probably could send messages through the QT wallet, but that's all it is. I mean, there's no control to it other than being able to send a message through the software. But nonetheless, Gavin Andreessen, who was a supporter of Free Talk Live, what we call an amplifier, they help us advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. He wanted to come to lunch. He was going to drive up to where we are. And, you know, if an amplifier wants to show me pictures of their kid, I don't care. Let's go to lunch. I'll take a look.
You use the cell radio.
Right.
You still attempt it.
Indeed. I do, now and then. If you come with your wallet wide open, you know, I will attempt. But, you know, so, yeah, sure, we'll have lunch with you. And so he wanted to talk about his magic internet money, a new currency. And we talked about currencies, gold and silver.
Magic internet mining.
Magic internet money is what I call it.
That's what you call it.
Yeah, somewhere along the line that got coined. But it wasn't mine.
You haven't trademarked it yet.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to. It wouldn't be fair. And in the spirit of Bitcoin, I will not trademark it. So he wanted to talk about it, and we talked about it. We had all the questions that anybody would have. What's it backed by? What happens if the government buys a bunch of it? You know, all those questions that people have early on. He addressed them adroitly, and I just, you know, I offered him some podcast ads, which we had plenty of at the time, for some of his Bitcoin, and he didn't ever take me up on it. But in that moment, we became the first ad venue in the world to accept Bitcoins for advertising. We talked about it that evening on the air. He didn't want to pay for his meal, so he wanted to pay for his meal in Bitcoin, so I paid for it on the credit card, and he sent me, I think, something like 45 Bitcoins or something.
45 Bitcoins in approximately what year?
This is January 2011.
And how much were they worth then?
27 cents. Got my first Bitcoins at 27 cents. So I got an online wallet at mybitcoinwallet.com, and for those that have been around long enough and studied the scams in Bitcoin, that was one of them. And we lost all the Bitcoins. But...
Wow. You physically lost them?
What would this physically mean?
Well, I mean, you lost your address, or you lost the company disappeared? Or?
Right. It was basically somebody who's out there saying, send me your Bitcoins, I'll take care of them for you.
And they did.
And they did, yeah. But Bitcoin back in the day was pretty Wild West. People suggested that maybe they put a hit out on the guy, and suddenly half of our Bitcoins came back. And so I got half of them out of that deal.
And why didn't they threaten it again to the other?
I don't know. Maybe they're happy. You got me.
did you retain those Bitcoins?
Yes, I put them at Mt. Gox.
Okay. Now, before you explain that one, and that was happened shortly before he came on the show, because he talked about it back then too. I remember. But had you also started to solicit Bitcoins from your listeners at that point?
I think. Somewhere in that range. I have to credit Roger Ver, known as Bitcoin Jesus, who's now pushing Bitcoin Cash, and I like Bitcoin Cash. He was an advertiser on the show. He was spending about $3,500 a month. We were just making middle-class incomes. It's not like we were raking in the dough or anything like that. And that was a big chunk of our nut every month. And he decided he wanted to start paying in Bitcoin. And first I said, how about one day's worth a week, one-seventh of your amount? And he's fine with that. Then a couple of months later, he starts getting antsy again and wants to pay the whole thing. And about that time, I think, is when we started accepting Bitcoin, when Roger was essentially demanding.
Now, not to get too into your personal business, but I sort of will right now.
Yeah, I guess you'll have to.
Did that become... No, it isn't. It's not a job. It's an aspirational job.
Treat it like it's a job.
Yeah. You must have had to say, like, how are we going to account for this on you know, our bookkeeping and our taxes, et cetera?
Oh, no. I mean, no, I guess we didn't think about that. Bitcoin wasn't even real back then you could buy...
But you were accepting it. You must have thought it was real enough.
Yes, we did, but there was no IRS form out on it. There was...
So you started taking Bitcoins instead of tulips, right?
Right.
Or chickens or...
Right. There was. You could buy alpaca socks, VPN services, and girls go on Bitcoin. I mean, that was what there was in Bitcoin at the time.
Okay. So all these Bitcoins that were coming into you now, because $3,500 a month of Bitcoin must have been thousands of Bitcoins.
It was. I remember trading 1,000 Bitcoins in for $1,000 to show my wife that it could be done.
Okay.
Wow.
And then, so where you were putting them in Mt. Gox then?
Once Roger's like, we're going to, you know, spend Bitcoin with you, then Ian, my co-host who does sort of the technical stuff, he got into it. He said, okay, we're setting up QT wallets. We're going to run nodes. You're going to take your private keys. You're going to put them on a fob. You're going to put them in a safe deposit box, you know, that kind of thing. So at that point, we became secure, and I got everything out of Mt. Gox. I did warn all my listeners ahead of time. There's something fishy.
Tell people what Mt. Gox is.
Yeah,
was.
What that is.
Mt. Gox was the first and biggest exchange for a very long time of Bitcoin, but something was clearly fishy. The price there was higher.
What was it before it was a Bitcoin exchange?
It was a Magic the Gathering trading card exchange.
Oh.
That's what it stands for, Mt. Gox.
Say that one more time.
Magic the Gathering. It's a card game.
Magic the Gathering?
Yeah, it's like baseball. It's like a game with baseball cards.
Right.
And, the guy, Mark Karpeles, the guy who ran it, decided, I like this Bitcoin thing. So he just added on a feature, just cloned his website, essentially, and began trading.
So when did you feel this thing was really going somewhere?
I used to say when it was at a dollar that if you can get any Bitcoin you can buy under 10,000 is a deal, and that if Bitcoin's worth a dollar, it's worth a million. So I guess I thought it. Because I believed it.
But why
did
you believe that?
Because Bitcoin has always done everything it says it's going to do, except the anonymity thing. We talked about anonymity early on, and it just doesn't have anonymity. And the transactional fees have gone up, have skyrocketed. But, you know, you can't break it. It's not breakable. And if it's not breakable, then it has the value of gold does. I mean, why does gold have value? Because it's it doesn't tarnish. You can mold it. There's gold running around.
Shiny.
Yeah. Well, King Solomon had some of the gold that exists today in his vault. It lasts, and Bitcoin can last.
Let me give Andy and Lee another chance to get in on this. Although it sounds like they're just absorbing all this. Have you sparked any other questions in your mind, Andy or Lee? No.
Nope.
Okay. All right.
No, it's a very good conversation, though. I'm really enjoying it.
All right. Well, I'm glad. I hope the listeners are, too.
Let me point something out here. Digital currency, Bitcoin explained. And it says, how are they kept secure?
And you got to get in front of your mic.
I'm sorry. The Bitcoin, this is from the money section of the Herald Tribune locally. The Bitcoin network works by harnessing the individual's greed for the collective good.
Oh, my. Okay.
That's the headline of that paragraph.
I guess that's what money does generally. All right.
So it's consistent with that. A network of tech-savvy users called miners keep the system honest, by pouring their computing power. Let's see. What is it?
Well, there's a lot to read there. So what is the point of this person's column there?
Well, the overall explanation is this. How Bitcoin, the title of each section is How Do Bitcoins Work? What is it worth? Why are Bitcoins popular? Are they really anonymous, which is what you just addressed a little bit ago? How are they kept secure, which is what I was reading from at this point? How are they created? And this is all provided for the general readership and ignorance that prevails.
Who was the author of that?
It just the Associated Press is all I have.
Okay, so the Associated Press primer, because everybody's jumping on this right now.
I think that probably the most telling part for me, Augie, is that the people that are now that you read about getting into Bitcoin are big time investors. They have some level of confidence that this is that it's a money maker. If they don't, obviously there are scams that big time investors have been involved in. I think the housing bubble is a pretty clear indication of what's going on there. But it seems like they look at it and say, well, there's something here.
Well, the classic situation that's mentioned in this article that Jamie Dimon referred to.
Okay, we're going to get into all that. Those of the crew that have actually looked at the rundown would know we're coming up on this right now, so this sounds like a good segue for it right now as we go forward. U.S. financial firm CME Group, CBOE, and Cantor Fitzgerald revealed Friday they will list financial products offering exposure to cryptocurrencies starting December 18th. First unveiled in an announcement by the U.S. Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the regulator said all three companies will pursue a self-certified initial listing after working with the agency to set a standard for the offerings. Both the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME, and the Chicago Board of Options Exchange will offer cash-settled contracts that will find investors buying exposure to different reference rates that will not require custody of the asset. CME will use a custom reference rate created by partner Crypto Facilities, with the CBOE intends to use data from the New York-based cryptocurrency exchange Gemini. Cantor Exchange, a subsidiary of Cantor Fitzgerald, will offer Bitcoin binary options. Now, regular listeners of the show have known we've been talking about Ledger X, the CBOE, CME, and NASDAQ, and now this is the fifth name of a major financial player that we have brought up and is actually new to us this week. Cantor Fitzgerald, of course, took a lot of casualties in the attack on the World Trade Center and suffered many casualties there, along with several other companies there, but that was the a time of great awareness of them. They've been in a little lower profile now. The Commodities Futures Trading Commission Commissioner, J. Christopher Giancario, was quick to caution against the idea that the products would be regulated under its full oversight, noting its limited statutory ability to oversee underlying cash markets for Bitcoin trading. Buyer beware, in other words. Elsewhere, the CFTC sought to frame itself as a participant in the launch, indicating that it held discussions with CME, Cantor, and CBOE for months prior to today's news. Now, there is if you go to the Henry Raine Show Facebook page or you go to TradingView.com, Andy has put up his most recent column today talking much about the futures and what this could mean and the market manipulation. So you can find that article at either place. We're going to bring him into this in just a second. The Terry Duffy, the CME Group chairman and CEO, said he believes the Chicago-based exchange has put in the necessary safeguards. The Bitcoin's futures product will be subject to risk management tool, including a margin of 35% position, an intraday price limit. The new contracts will be traded on their GlobeX platform. Well, that goes a little bit farther. In other reading, I saw that they will have 2-minute circuit breakers when something moves in, and I think it was 7%. Which is a blink of an eye in the marketplaces for cryptocurrency, that they'll shut down for 2 minutes. J.P. Morgan, many of us have not forgotten the words of Jamie Dimon, they have announced that they will participate in this. And let's bring Andy into this. You had a lot of observations in your column, and go to TradingView.com. Goldbug 1, search that way. You can also go to the Facebook page Seeking Cryptos and see more of Andy's work there. What did you have to say about the futures announcement this week?
Well, there's not much to say. I think a lot of people don't distinguish between a cash-settled security and something that is, you can take delivery on, like gold. So this is going to be trading like the VIX futures or the S&P mini futures or the S&P futures, where it's cash to cash, and you're pretty much gambling on whether the cost of the price of Bitcoin is going to go up or down, the futures market really has no effect on the price of Bitcoin, because just like the futures market for the S&P mini futures has no effect on the price of the S&P. The S&P moves back and forth, and the futures is actually affected by that. So, but where the manipulation can come in is if a large investor is on the wrong side of a contract, let's say they sold a bunch, you know, and so they went short, and they're getting a little crushed, they could actually use their stack of Bitcoin if they have a lot of Bitcoin and go to
Andy, let me just ask you to let's make it a little bit more real case for the listeners. So say Bitcoin is trading at $10,000 a Bitcoin. So when you say they go short, what did they do?
Well, they're selling Bitcoin contracts at $10,000. They're selling futures contracts, and there's a buyer that says it will be $10,000. Now, it won't be $10,000. If the price of Bitcoin is $10,000 today, we're looking at a March contract, so they may be selling, you know, $11,000 futures contracts.
Okay,
so I would say to Augie, listen, I'm going to sell you an $11,000. If it gets to $11,000 or higher, then Augie makes money. If it's less than that, then I make money.
Okay, and then so how do they protect themselves? I think that's where you were going with the conversation.
Yeah, so if I'm selling contracts, I want to own a bunch of Bitcoin. And because there's such a limited supply of it, the more I own, the more manipulative of the market I can be. So if I find that I've sold them to Augie at 11,000 and it's trading at 12,500 and it's getting close to the, you know, options expiration or the futures expiration date, I could use my 100,000 Bitcoin that I just have sitting on the table and go into Gemini, which one of the futures markets only based on Gemini, and I could just go ahead and sell $20,000 at market price and just start going right through stop losses. And, you know, create a sell-off in Bitcoin and then close my futures contract where Augie, who was in the money 1 minute, is now, you know, getting a margin call from his broker the next.
Okay, let's back that up so people can follow it a little bit more, though, because you have a bunch of Bitcoin. You have enough that you can go ahead because you're looking to prevent a loss, that you're going to sell a small portion of that, but you're going to sell it in, like, a desperate manner where you just put it out there for whatever anybody will pay for you, and it's really more than the market can absorb right now. So all of a sudden, after the first few, there isn't money to buy it at the price it was going at. People offer you less. As it's getting offered less and the price is going down, you say stop losses are triggered. And by that, you mean other people who are holding Bitcoin and said, well, if the price goes below a certain level, sell me out. And then you get a cascading effect of those people. The price drops more than what the market would normally expect at the time, and that's when you cover your position?
And that's when I would close out my futures contract.
Okay.
And then I would buy my Bitcoin with the money I made off the futures contract. I could buy my Bitcoin back and still profit.
Because you're buying it cheaper.
Because I'm buying it cheaper now.
And
it's, you see it in the Forex markets all the time where large institutions, and of course, remember, those markets are regulated. Bitcoin markets are not regulated.
Right.
So if I'm a big institution and I'm trying to do it against, let's say I'm trading the gold market, because everyone's familiar with that, and it's a light day on the gold market, the Shanghai, you know, they're having a holiday or something. I can figure out where the price of gold is. Say it's at 1320. I can figure that most people have their stop losses that are long at 1300. So if I can sell a huge order and get into those stop losses at 1300, that will cause a cascading domino effect. And you see that all the time in gold and silver, where all of a sudden you'll have a 2 minute spike down where it just goes right through all those margins, or right through all those stop losses. And by the time it comes back up, people cannot fill the orders. So you see it all the time in something that's not regulated, like Gemini or Bittrex or Bitfinex or any of these exchanges, they actually can see the stop losses. So they can use that to their benefit against the average Joe investor that's just thinking, okay, I'm bought at 1200, I'm putting a stop loss here at 1150. Well, they can see where all those stop losses are lined up, and they can use their influence on the market to push through those and then, you know, clean out the average Joe and then stock up, stock back up. And you've seen that spike when it fell from 12,000 and what, spiked down to 8,600 on some exchanges.
All right.
And then quickly came back up.
Yep.
And you can take a look at this at your own pace and read it yourself at tradingview.com. I think it's /goldbug1, or just go to the Henry Rancho Facebook page. Let's go a little bit deeper into the futures as far as what the mainstream was covering it. This is Barry Silbert of Digital Currency Group. He was asked about it on CNBC. It's courtesy of them.
I think from a transactional volume perspective, I'm not that excited about what we're going to see in the futures, but I think it is going to enable, finally, the approval of Bitcoin ETFs and other digital currency ETFs, which is game-changing.
Right. Explain this.
So he's talking about exchange-traded funds. Many of us, if we have 401ks or IRAs and you're not doing individual stocks in them, you might have an S&P 500 exchange-traded fund. If you had one of those this year, you're up 20% in the course of a year. Of course, that's a one-day movement in cryptocurrency. But Mark, you may not be aware of this, but quantum physicists have been doing a lot of research in time and space, and they've determined that 1 week of crypto time is equal to 7 months in human time. And it has to do with the speed of light and stuff. I'm not in string theory, but they're nailing it down. It's getting closer to be a full theory. But
I'm more interested in what quantum computing will do to cracking encryption. But
well, you have to come back next week for that.
Yeah.
We'll explain that all to you, too. Augie will, because by then there'll be a new Herald Tribune article out on it.
I bring in the mundane for the so-called enlightened.
Or the informed, as we hope our listeners are.
All
right. Back to the enlightened Barry Silver Digital Currency Group.
What do you really think about the liquidity of Bitcoin right now? We were talking about an investor yesterday that I met with who was saying, look, if you think about like a Coinbase or something like that, first of all, there's huge fees that Coinbase charges, right? 4% on both sides of ledger. And at some point...
Not that much. Yeah, about 1%, I think.
Yeah, 1%.
Actually, since neither of them seem to have the actual information, it actually runs from 1.5% to 4%, depending on the method of payment you're using. Just for those of you that haven't jumped into Coinbase on Thanksgiving weekend, when your Uncle Joe was telling you how much money he was making to it, and 100,000 of you signed up for it. So,
I stay away from Coinbase.
It was probably more like Nephew Jake.
Yes, you're probably right there. Signing up Uncle Joe. And having him sign over the money to him so he could trade it for him.
I think it's a little bit more than that. But nonetheless, the question is, you got to have a buyer, you got to have a seller. In some of these cases, they're sort of market makers in this. So are people really going to, they're going to put up the gates if everyone tries to flood out at one time?
Right. Well, look, I think it's all relative. A year ago, daily trading volume globally was maybe 300, 400, 500 million. Today it's multi-billion. We're going to finally see global order book get created so you can tap into liquidity around the world. We've invested in 20 exchanges around the world, and we have fantastic visibility into kind of their metrics. And from an institutional investor perspective, we're finally now at the point where investors can put real money to work and have enough liquidity in Bitcoin. I'm not talking about the other ones yet quite.
How much of this right now, though, is still a speculation, meaning people think about Bitcoin?
All right. Well, they're going to cover a lot of the ground we cover on the show, both in past shows and probably in the future right here. So there was a lot there. The exchange-traded funds is the main thing that I want to focus on, that money that is going to be coming in. Mark, your thoughts on it?
Well, it's clearly it's going to drive the pricing up.
Are you positioned to take advantage of it?
Of them driving the price up?
Yes.
I've been selling Bitcoin. I'm getting into Bitcoin Cash. I'm more interested in Monero, Dash, IOTA, some of the alternative currencies out there. My concern is that Bitcoin's transaction fees have been as high as $20 in the last month, and it's no longer what it said it was going to be, which was a currency. Like, it was the way it got where it was to say that it's a currency. Now it is the digital equivalent of a bearer bond or a wire transfer, and it doesn't deliver on the things that it used to say that it was to deliver on. Remember the whole thing where we're going to bring banking to the third world and we're going to allow them to do their thing. You know, we'll give them smartphones and they'll be able to bank and they'll pull themselves up by their bootstraps. This is very libertarian stuff.
Have you
stuff.
Ever tried to lift yourself up by your bootstraps?
It doesn't
work. You get a hernia. Right?
It's just going to hurt yourself.
Let me bring Lee into this, because in the weeks past, he was one of the first people on the show to start talking about some of these problems and touting the lower transaction fees of Bitcoin Cash. But one of the things that I was thinking about when I was hearing Andy talk about the manipulation of the markets, for people that haven't heard on previous shows, and correct me if I misstate any of this, Lee, that it's not like you have to have the inventory to sell the people, or is it the reverse of that? You don't have inventory, and you have to go out and buy it when they need it. Lee?
Well, I'm sorry.
Somebody
is barking right in the middle of the conversation.
Well, he probably has an opinion, too. So, but
yeah, obviously, we have to have – if this is in reference to whether we have to have inventory or not, it's based on our licensing. We have to have inventory, so then we have to deal with the volatility, which is frustrating. But currently, the conversation about the fees is right on target. Mark is exactly correct. And we're in a space now where the Bitcoin fees, the network fees, are costing us so much that we're having to deal with adjusting like the minimum transaction size, because anything less than like, I think it's almost $100 now, where any transaction less than $100 costs us money. We actually lose money in the transaction, even with a 15% fee. It's still not enough.
Which currencies are you currently offering in your machines?
Which currencies? We're currently offering Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dash, and Litecoin, and we should have Bitcoin Cash live sometime this week. I know the node finished building yesterday. So.
Now, the other currencies besides Bitcoin that you currently are offering, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Dash, how do their transaction fees compare, or is that a concern?
They're marginal. They're almost non-existent. Some of them don't even have them. I'm not 100% sure what the fees are, but I know none of the other currencies we offer have fees that are even worth consideration. They actually function as currency, whereas the current named Bitcoin, which isn't the real Bitcoin, has these just ridiculously massive fees. It just doesn't work as a currency at all.
Yeah, I don't think they want it to work as a currency, quite frankly. And, you know,
who's they?
Blockstream. Blockstream, to some extent, is... They employ some of the developers, some of the major developers for Bitcoin, and... you know, I've heard all kinds of claims. Blockstream's backed by big bankers, and, you know, I've seen some evidence for it.
Well, something that you might be able to enlighten us on. Now, what about media outlets? Because Roger Ver has Bitcoin.com.
That's correct.
And he has openly been touting Bitcoin Cash there almost with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
And now, is Blockstream, is CoinDesk or one of those other ones part of that?
Blockstream has nothing to do. Roger Ver and Blockstream cannot be in the same
room. CoinDesk. Because CoinDesk, when you look at them,
I don't know.
They, at the bottom of the articles, they got a piece of action of all kinds of stuff they write about.
I don't know.
Do you know, Lee?
No, I do know. Coinbase was heavily in support of SegWit and and pushing for this to occur. So it's, you know, what's really difficult, and this is a problem that's emerged much more since the dawning of the internet than prior, but it's really hard to weed through what is true and what isn't true, who's supporting what and who isn't supporting what. And back when this was emerging prior to the hard fork, there was all kinds of information, like, was Bitcoin Unlimited in support of the hard fork with 8 meg blocks, or were they pushing the agenda for SegWit to emerge in, and how that all transpired, it's still basically clear as mud.
Yeah.
But I do know for a fact that based upon comments made by CoinDesk, they supported the SegWit side. So in a nutshell, they supported the ridiculously massive fees.
Well, the good news is the White House is monitoring all this. And coming up after after the break. We'll continue with...
I have a question. Does that mean that Augie's wearing a tinfoil hat?
Never in a million years.
He's got that glorious hair of her, his, on top of his head right now.
His tinfoil is totally invisible, not visibly seen right now. Whatever is covered...
Unlike the fork under the orange hair.
Yeah.
All right, we have Lee Hansen, CEO of Byte Federal, the ATM company. We have Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1, TradingView columnist, Seeking Cryptos on Facebook, standing by. They'll be back after the break. Mark Edge, Free Talk Live, freetalklive.com. Ian, eat your heart out. he will be back on the other side. Augie, of course, will be here. I wouldn't know how to do this without Augie in the studio. And hopefully all of you that are listening will be back right after this.